From Washington, VOA presents Issues in the News.
Welcome to Issues in the News. I'm Fred Barnes of the Weekly Standard Magazine. Joining me on the show this week are Barbara Slavin, Acting Director of the Future of Iran Initiative at the Atlantic Council, and Washington correspondent for Al Monitor, and Tom DeFrank, contributing editor to National Journal. And here are the issues. With Donald Trump gaining on Hillary Clinton, the presidential race is now essentially tied with the first televised debate slated for September 26th. Both Clinton and Trump got favorable reports on their health from doctors. Clinton's came after a bout of pneumonia that led to her collapse as she left a 9/11 memorial ceremony. Trump, meanwhile, announced an economic plan featuring tax cuts and relief from regulations. And the ceasefire in Syria, brokered by the U.S. and Russia, has produced a significant drop in violence, according to a United Nations envoy. Tom, let me start with you. How did this presidential race get tied?
Well, I don't think it's so much as Donald Trump gaining, though he definitely has gained, is Hillary Clinton lagging and sagging. We all know that campaigns go in cycles, and Trump looked good after the Republican convention, and then he had a down cycle through a series of blunders and gaffes and misstatements. And Hillary Clinton, after the Democratic convention, opened up a double-digit lead. And in the last month or so, she has not had a good couple of weeks, culminating in the continuing flap over her emails, which did or didn't transmit classified information or violate classification rules, and then her illness, which you summarized very well there, her pneumonia. And I think the problem there was that they covered it up. She was diagnosed with pneumonia on a Friday. It only came out 3 days later. And so Hillary Clinton has had a bad month, no doubt about it, and Trump has taken advantage of that. I think at the moment the race is tied more or less, but I do believe there's time for another cycle or two.
Indeed, yeah. Well, that's what I meant.
But it's very competitive. For the first time, I think it is genuinely a horse race.
What's your take, Barbara?
Yeah, obviously it has tightened, and I think that's sending shivers through a lot of Democrats who are terrified at the prospect of Donald Trump, not just Democrats, but a lot of Republicans as well. And I think you're right to point to the first debate on September 26th as really being crucial. The winner of that encounter will have a tremendous advantage going into the election, and you know, we just don't know how Trump is going to play it. He has behaved himself, quote unquote, for the last couple of weeks under the tutelage of a new campaign manager, Kellyanne Conway. But he can't resist opening his mouth and saying objectionable things. You know, he was relatively restrained after Hillary collapsed and it was announced that she had pneumonia. But then in a speech in Canton, Ohio, he started to make fun of her. He said, "I don't know, folks, do you think Hillary could stand up here for an hour?" And if he continues to use that sort of insult tack, that could once again turn off a lot of people.
Tom, Hillary also was quoted, speaking of insults, and saying that half of Donald Trump's supporters are racist, sexist, homophobic, xenophobic, and Islamophobic. She backed away from that a little. She backed away from saying half of his supporters anyway. Has that hurt her? I've been unclear about that myself, but a political editor of the Des Moines Register, obviously in Iowa, an important state, said, for instance, in Iowa, where Trump seems to be doing surprisingly well, it did not go over well there.
Well, I should have mentioned that earlier, Fred. I think that really hurt her, too. It revived memories of former Massachusetts Governor Mitt Romney 4 years ago in a private session with fundraisers saying there are 47% of the American people who essentially believe they're entitled to a government handout and they're not like the rest of it. It became known as the 47%, and it really hurt her. This is similar. I think it hurt her. It just added to the narrative of woes that she's had to deal with in the in the last month. I think it hurt her. Did it destroy her?
Mm-hmm.
No, it was hyperbolic. I mean, they should never allow, candidates should never allow cameras in fundraisers with wealthy people because they get all worked up and it was over the top. I mean, I think what she said was true, but not half. I mean, you know,
Wait a minute. The polls show that indeed half or more than half of Trump supporters are Islamophobic, homophobic, xenophobic, misogynist.
They're Islamophobic. What does that mean?
It means that they have an irrational hatred of Muslims.
So this shows in polls irrational hatred of Muslims.
It does indeed.
But what is the question asked that reveals that?
Do you trust Muslims? These are people who lump all Muslims into one basket, to use Hillary's unfortunate term.
I think you're on thin ice on this one, but I wanted to ask you something else because...
Add on to what Tom said? I mean, the mistake that she made, and it was a true gaffe because she actually spoke the truth when she shouldn't have. That's what we call a gaffe in Washington. You should blame the sin, not the sinner. And so she said the people are irredeemable, and she should have focused on the attitudes, not the individuals, because it means that she can't attract these people. She's already said they're beyond the pale, and there's nothing anyone can do.
It was very bad stagecraft also. She said, and she said later, well, I look at what I said. What she also said was, you know, there are millions of people who are very sincere, hardworking, patriotic Americans, but she said that later. If she had begun this little soliloquy with, I recognize there are millions of hardworking, honest, patriotic Americans whose views we should respect and try to understand, but there's this half, it would not nearly have been the firestorm that it was. So that was poor statecraft, and it reminds me, at least, that she has not gotten better as a campaigner.
She was also suffering from pneumonia at the time, as we subsequently learned.
Here's what I wanted to follow up on. You said, and I agree with you, this debate coming up is unusually important. Now, when we look back in presidential races, the debates have never been decisive, really. Mm-hmm. Maybe the ones with so many years ago with Nixon and Kennedy, they were in 1960, but since then they really haven't been when all three of them were put together. I think these debates are different. Why do you think they're different and so important, Barbara?
Absolutely. The entire country, the entire world is going to be tuning in to watch these. And we haven't had a chance to look at the two candidates side by side. This will be that first opportunity to see them react to each other, to react to the moderator, to see them answer the same question and see how they handle it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's important in terms of what is their knowledge base, how do they react to tough questions, how do they treat each other. It's just going to be fascinating on so many levels.
Tom?
Who would ever have thought that Hillary Clinton needed the first debate more than Donald Trump? I think she needs it more.
Mm-hmm.
She's quite capable of doing extremely well, but we will see. But Barbara is right. In 2012, which was Barack Obama's reelection year, the last debate had 67 million viewers. This one's going to be much, much higher than that. And also, I think first impressions may not be fatal, but this is going to be a very important first one. You had two instances in 1984 where Ronald Reagan did poorly and had to bounce back, and there have been other couple of instances.
In 2012, Mitt Romney did particularly well in that first debate, and then President Obama had to bounce back, which he did.
Incumbent presidents typically don't do so great in the first debate because they're rusty. They haven't had a debate for 4 years.
Hillary is not rusty.
She's not rusty. She's had debates. Hillary is a great debater, and so we'll have to see who does the better job of getting under the skin of the other one. Because somebody's going to make a mistake, probably, and it will be fascinating. And I'm very glad I'm going to be at that debate in Long Island.
Oh, wonderful!
I think in the past, correct me if I'm wrong, there was a debate of the three debates. One of them specifically on foreign and national security policy. Is there one this time that?
I believe there is. The first one is all general. General. Mm-hmm. But I believe there is one, and that will be a challenge for Trump because the other thing is he has been very disciplined, very good, with some exceptions, notable exceptions.
Right.
He has behaved, so to speak. But you don't get cue cards to look at in debates. You don't have teleprompters to read your final statements. Mm-hmm. And so it's going to be, it will be extraordinary mm-hmm. television, but I think it's going to be very important in shaping people's final decisions here.
I want to ask a couple more things about Trump and
Health
and Hillary Clinton. His health. Well, surprisingly, as a friend of mine said, actually it was Brit Hume of Fox News, when it turns out that he weighs 237 pounds, that he must have a very good tailor, because you don't really see it.
Yes, you do.
Well, sorry. Anyway, I was a little surprised. But there's this. This is the Wall Street Journal, and the headline of the story is Trump recasts his image. Well, I'll start with you, Tom. Has he been able to do that? He certainly has a softer image, slightly soft, well, I think even more than slightly, over the last couple of weeks, his image, and that's helped him.
It has definitely helped him. He's read speeches from teleprompters using words that he clearly would not say if he mm-hmm. were rambling off the cuff, and that has been effective. He's done better, mm-hmm. but as Barbara has pointed out, mm-hmm. he has this tendency to be set off by anything. They can't stop him from sending tweets in the middle of the night, and he'll see something that he doesn't like, and he will mm-hmm. send out a tweet, mm-hmm. or he'll do a little snide insert to his speech, like mm-hmm. making fun of Hillary Clinton's health. Stamina, yeah. things mm-hmm. like that. Mm-hmm. He can't help himself. They can't stop him from doing it.
He seems to have helped himself, though.
Well, no.
Some.
In the strategic, in the macro sense, he has helped himself. Mm-hmm. He can't help himself from popping off. I mean, the other day, just a day or so ago, he said that he's not prepared to say that President Obama was born in America. And his campaign manager said, no, Mr. Trump believes that Obama was born in the United States. And mm-hmm. Trump said, well, she can say what she wants. I'm not ready to say that yet. And that seems to me to be nuts.
Would you call that an unforced error?
Exactly right. Now, Hillary has had many more unforced errors lately than Trump, but that was an unforced Trump mm-hmm. error.
Let me ask you about Hillary. So she has said, or her aides have said, and I read all these stories, and I wonder why sometimes, because they don't advance the ball a whole lot, the stories on this race. And she said, well, what she needs to do now is really let people know her vision of America and how she sees it if she's president. And my reaction was, is she just getting around to this now? I mean, the election's on November 8th.
No, I think she's laid it out from the beginning. I mean, she has more plans for more issues than any candidate mm-hmm. in the history of the United States. You know, she has... I think what she needs to do is she's trying to bring people back to that, because there has been this whole period where mm-hmm. it's yet again her emails. Mm-hmm. Were they classified? Were they not? Why did she have a private server? Her fight with Colin Powell, which I'm sure we'll get to. And I think she wants to bring people back, particularly mm-hmm. in a week where Trump announced his so-called child care plan.
Yeah. What about that?
She's got a really good one, mm-hmm. and one that will actually help people who earn less than $500,000 a year. So, I mean, we can talk about...
And his
about,
doesn't
his,
help?
His is largely a big tax deduction for the wealthy, like most of his economic plans.
Tom, what about Trump's tax cuts, regulatory relief, his economic plan, which I think gives him an advantage over Hillary? She doesn't have as growth-oriented a plan.
Well, I think that's probably...
Economic growth.
I think that's probably right, Fred, but Hillary Clinton can pick it apart as just another soak the middle class at the expense of tax breaks for the wealthy. The old so-called voodoo economics, as George Bush once mm-hmm. described Ronald Reagan's similar plan.
Well, we'll have more in just a minute. First, a reminder that you're listening to Issues in the News, coming to you on the Voice of America in Washington. I'm your moderator, Fred Barnes of the Weekly Standard. Joining me today are Tom DeFrank of National Journal and Barbara Slavin of Al Monitor. And this is a reminder that you can listen to Issues Online as a podcast. The program is also available for free download on iTunes. Just click on the iTunes tab on our website at voanews.com/archive/ Issues in the News. Well, I want to talk a little bit more about Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump, because we've never had a presidential race like this, at least in my memory. And Tom, you've been doing about as long as I have, going back at least to the 70s. And this one is certainly different. I want to discuss very briefly their health. Mm-hmm. My impression is that over all these, Tom, you may agree, that the one thing that presidents and presidential candidates and leading politicians like to hide is anything that's wrong with their health. I don't trust any statements, whether it's Trump's doctor or Hillary's doctor. Ronald Reagan tried to hide things and so on. What do you make of this? Am I exaggerating this?
No, you're not. I mean, you can go back to Woodrow Wilson, who suffered a stroke, mm-hmm. and for the last few years of his presidency was essentially, I don't mean to be unkind, was a vegetable. He was a really sick person, and his wife and
Tom, that was pretty unkind.
I didn't mean it to be that way, but he was barely functioning as a human being, much less a president.
Right.
And then we have John F. Kennedy's problems with Parkinson's disease.
Addison's.
That's exactly right. And Franklin Roosevelt's
paralysis
thing. So this is not a new phenomenon, but you're right. They're always great. They're always healthy. But it's more important this time because if Donald Trump is the next president, he will be the oldest president ever elected. And Hillary will be less than a year younger, 70 and 69 respectively. And so health is an issue. What I'd like to see is an independent review board of physicians review all these records, but that will never happen. But they both seem healthy enough to be president, and we're not gonna have any kind of independent judgment to refute that.
And you mean what we know now is what we're going to know?
Exactly right. Just like Donald Trump's tax returns, what we know now, which is not much, is what we're going to know.
Well, I think we know more about his health than we do. What do you make, Barbara, of this whole health issue? I mean, you know, even Ronald Reagan, we know now, when he happened to be in Germany, went to see a German doctor alternative medicine when he had colon cancer, and obviously it was kept secret at the time.
Yeah. Look, they are old, and they are suffering, both of them, from the kinds of ailments that people of that age are prone to. Trump, as you pointed out, is 236 pounds, which is the upper bound of what is considered overweight by the National Institutes of Health. He takes statins to lower his cholesterol and an aspirin regimen to prevent heart attacks, I guess, and strokes. That's not trim and fit. I'm sorry, despite the fact that
it's normal for men his age. However.
Well, you know, what's normal?
That's how I know this.
Yeah, he is not the picture of good health that he pretends to be. He said he feels like he was 30, but he is an older, overweight person who has to take medication for cholesterol and potential heart problems. Hillary, on the other hand, has to take thyroid medication and blood thinners because she's prone to blood clots. So they are not, either of them, ready to run a marathon or win the Olympics. And I think we have to be aware of that. More information is better. The way Trump chose to, quote unquote, reveal his health issues was ludicrous. He went on a reality talk show with a Dr. Oz, himself a rather shady figure, and gave him a piece of paper, which Dr. Oz looked at and then put in his pocket. And then it was only the next day that we got, this two-page thing from Trump's Trump's doctor with his test results. So I'm not impressed by the candor of either candidate, I have to say.
Well, one more question, and that is, I think the conventional wisdom is, since Trump has been gaining, that the momentum is with him. I'm always dubious of when some candidate is claimed to have momentum, because he's usually given that candidate is given credit for having momentum just about the time the momentum is stopping.
Right. As I said, there are cycles here. And what George H.W. Bush liked to call the Big Mo.
Yeah.
The Big Mo can sometimes become slow-mo overnight.
In his case, it was soon no-mo.
If Hillary Clinton has a good speech somewhere, I mean, the debate will be decisive. I believe the numbers, the national polling numbers, are going to change significantly after the first debate. I don't know which way they're going to change, but I think they will change. And once again, it's not just popular vote. It's the electoral map, the electoral college. And I still think, even though Trump all of a sudden looks like he could well win Ohio, and no Republican nominee has ever won the White House without Ohio, I still think she has a stronger path to victory in the Electoral College than he does. But that could change also.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. Barbara?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Again, she's had a couple of bad weeks, but there is still time.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's turn to the ceasefire in Syria.
Sure.
When it was made, it didn't exactly trigger a burst of optimism about what would happen that happened in Syria. But it's as this UN envoy said, it's there has been a significant drop in violence.
Yeah, I think all sides are absolutely exhausted. But the key test for this, I was also very pessimistic. I don't think this is going to lead to peace in Syria. The key thing is to get some humanitarian aid into Aleppo and other besieged parts of the country. There,
is that happening?
As we speak, it's not yet clear that there is that much humanitarian aid is making its way in, and that's going to be really the crucial test. The other aspect, if the ceasefire by some miracle actually holds, we may see the beginnings of some tacit military cooperation between the United States and Russia in going after ISIS and a group called the Nusra Front, which is the al-Qaeda affiliate in mm-hmm. Syria, which has tried to muddy the waters by changing its name and pretending it's no longer al-Qaeda, but it is al-Qaeda. There are other players here, of course. There are the Turks, who have been involved in and who had their own military intrusion into Syria and are trying to sort of carve out a little pocket on the border for some sort of haven, perhaps. Not clear if they can maintain that. So there are a lot of moving pieces. If all goes well, if the ceasefire can hold for a bit, they're going to try to restart the political talks in Geneva that have totally failed up mm-hmm. until now. And it's really just a question of how exhausted all the parties are. Bashar al-Assad says he's not going anywhere, and if he refuses to step down even at the end of a transition process, then there is no peace.
Tom?
Well, the good news is that at the moment, at least, as we speak, as Barbara says, mm-hmm. the violence level is way down. In that respect, the military aspects of the ceasefire at the moment appear to be holding. I think one of the keys is going to be whether the United States can ever get its arms around the notion of military cooperation with the Russians. The Pentagon has been leaking furiously how upset they are about this and how wary they are. They're, the old, in the Cold War days, Ronald Reagan's trust but verify mm-hmm. notion. Mm-hmm. The Pentagon is not trusting the Russians, and they definitely don't like the notion of maybe having to share intelligence
mm-hmm.
On if they decide to have coordinated airstrikes with the Russians. Mm-hmm. So that is going to be a continuing tension. So we will have to see. This is talk about a shotgun wedding.
Mm.
Let's see how it sorts out.
What would it take, Barbara, for there to be a regime change in Syria? Would the Russians and the Iranians both have to get together and decide that they wanted somebody new?
At some point, people are just going to have to decide that they've expended enough blood and treasure on this war. And so far, that hasn't happened. I mean, it's a huge drain, particularly on Iran, which mm-hmm. has spent a great deal propping up Assad and helping Hezbollah, the Lebanese group that's been doing most of the fighting. The Iranians have also organized various Shia militias coming from as far as, Pakistan, Afghanistan, to fight in Syria. The Iranians have lost their own military personnel, including some quite senior military figures fighting on Assad's part. And they have a lot of challenges, economic challenges at home that they have to deal with. So, maybe at some point people will say enough is enough, and they'll go and they'll cut a deal. And if the Russians and the Iranians agree on Assad stepping down, Assad steps down.
Mm-hmm. Tom?
That's a big if, but Barbara is right about that. That would be the end of the road. At some point, I think Assad is going to have to go. Of course, the Obama administration mm-hmm. has been saying that for 8 years. He's got to go. His name's mm-hmm. days are numbered. They're not numbered yet, but I don't think he'll be head of president of Syria in 4 years.
I don't know. In the annals of undeserving survivors, he tops the list. Anyway, mm-hmm. that's all the time we have. Joining us today were Barbara Slavin, acting director of the Future of Iran Initiative at the Atlantic Council and Washington correspondent for Al Monitor, and Tom DeFrank, contributing editor to National Journal. This program was produced by Anya Zalewski. Our engineers were Jonah Cummings and Linus Rimkus. I'm Fred Barnes of the Weekly Standard. Thanks for listening.